Hello, everybody. This is the second podcast for module FAC 3702. My name is Mushubi Mokhobinyani, one of the lecturers for this module. The purpose of this podcast is to provide you with the comments on general mistakes made in the May 2012 exam, as well as some specific comments on each area of exam paper. You know what I suggest you do? Do the exam paper first before listening to the rest of this podcast. When doing this paper, try doing it under exam conditions. What I mean is, do it in a quiet room somewhere and stick to the 2 hours allocated. Once the 2 hours have passed, stop writing immediately and mark yourself against the suggested solution. Once you have done that, listen to the rest of this podcast with both your solution and suggested solution in front of you. The question and solutions are available on the tutorial letter 202. At this point, I'm assuming you have attempted the question and marked yourself against the suggested solution. So let's see how you compare with common mistakes students that wrote these exams made. Let's get started by first looking at the general mistakes students made in this exam. Firstly, and probably the most important, do not waste time writing out unnecessary information that is not required. The question paper clearly indicates what notes are required. For example, on question 1, students were not required to provide investment property note, but a lot of students did. Next, students do not pay attention to the suggested timetable given to them on the front page of the question paper. Remember, this is a guideline of maximum amount of time you should be spending on each question. Because students do not use this guideline, a number of them did not even get the time to attempt the second question. Or they attempted it, but didn't have enough time to finish it. So try sticking to the time guideline as indicated. Next, for general entries, remember that dates are extremely important. You lose marks if a general entry does not have a date. Next, should you use the abbreviations in the exam or not? The problem is, each student may have a different abbreviation for the same thing, so it makes it very difficult to mark. And secondly, the marker may not even understand what your abbreviations stand for. So as a general rule, I would suggest do not make use of abbreviations in your general entries or when writing out your notes to avoid losing marks unnecessarily. Next, some students don't show their calculations. Remember, no marks can be given for incorrect amounts if the calculations are not given. So, to maximize your marks, show your workings and also remember to reference them to where it is disclosed. And also remember to show inputs used when using a financial calculator. Example, indicate amount used for PV, for N, the percentage used for I, etc. And finally, if we can't read what you have written, we will not give you marks. So handwriting needs to be legible and neat. Now, let's go through some of the specific mistakes on question 1 itself. The first part of the question was dealing with general entries on foreign exchange transactions. Firstly, remember we purchased the machine. The machine can only be recognized when the recognition criteria is met. Please take note that an asset is not recognized when an order is placed. In this question, Choco Coffee Limited placed a non-cancelable order on 1 November 2010 for the machine. The order was shipped free on board on 1 December 2010, and the machine was available for use as intended by management on 1 Jan 2011. Now, this means that the risk and rewards of ownership passed to the company on 1 December 2010. This is when the order was shipped free on board. Therefore, the machine and liability can only be recognized on that date, which is 1 December 2010 in this case. The other problem that we've identified is the use of incorrect terminology. For an example, a student would debit or credit an asset instead of debiting or crediting the machine. The other term commonly used is the term FEC. That means nothing to the marker. Rather say FEC asset or FEC liability. It's important to use the correct terminology because you lose marks for using the incorrect terms. Next,
Under the PPE note, you are supposed to disclose classes of property, plant and equipment separately. So in other words, you must have a separate column for land, a separate column for building, separate column for machinery, etc. Next, this is an area where I believe students lose a lot of easy marks on. Remember, after preparing a PPE note, just below it, you need to disclose the following narratives as required by AS 16. You need to disclose the date of valuation, which is normally given to you in the question, the basis used in the valuation process, which is also given to you in the question, how the valuation amounts were determined, this is also given to you in the question, and if the company follows the revaluation model, you need to disclose the carrying amount of an asset if cost minus accumulated depreciation would have been used. Remember that figure that you work out in your workings called historical carrying amount. That's the figure that you include here. Many students, for some reason, forget to include these narratives. These are easy marks that you're throwing away. Next, remember, revaluation amount is always calculated at the beginning of the financial year. And you do this by comparing NRV at the beginning of the financial year to a carrying amount at the beginning of the financial year. This means that if an NRV is given to you at the end of the financial year, you have to restate it to an NRV at the beginning of the financial year so that you are able to calculate your revaluation amount. This then implies that when calculating depreciation for the year in which the revaluation was done, the depreciation is based on the new revalued amount, not the cost of the assets. Now, let's move over to the second part of the question, deferred tax. Students were required to calculate deferred tax balance using the statement of financial position approach. This is that table where you compare carrying amount with tax base, and that gives you the temporary difference of which you apply a tax rate to that will give you a deferred tax. Very easy. You would have gotten all your marks if you have just done that, and that is all that was required. Well, that sums up question one. Let's move over to question two. I'm going to start off with impairment of the patent. Majority of the students were comfortable in calculating the carrying amount, no problems. The only thing is that students did not include consulting and legal fees in the cost of the asset. Next, remember, for you to calculate impairment, you need to work out the recoverable amount, which is the higher of fair value less cost to sell and value in use. When calculating fair value less cost to sell, students for some reason fail to deduct the cost to sell from the fair value, thus lost easy marks. And when trying to calculate value in use, many students calculated it incorrectly, or some did not even attempt to calculate it at all. This is the part where you use your financial calculator to calculate the present value of future cash flows, and that will give you your value in use. Now, the other area where students do very badly in is the disclosure under impairment loss. For more information on what needs to be disclosed, please go to page 113 and page 114 of the study guide. Okay, let's move over to internally generated patent, the calculations. Students were not familiar with the difference between research and development phase of the intangible asset, and instead, they included the full cost incurred over the period in the cost of the asset, instead of apportioning it between research and development. Next, the general overhead costs must not be included in the cost of the asset. Some students included it and were therefore penalized as a result. Next, the depreciation of the machine that was used to generate the patent is supposed to be included in the cost of the patent. Some students didn't do this. To calculate the depreciation that I just spoke about, you had to first start with calculating the cost of the machine. Remember, the machine had cost 2 million rand, but 1.1 million of that 2 million rand was paid in cash. The other 900,000 was financed over the period of 8 months. This meant that you had to present value the 900,000 using your financial calculator, then add that present value to the 1.1 million rand to get to the total cost of the asset. Now, before we move over to the next section, there's a brilliant exercise on your study guide that covers what I've just discussed above and more. It's example 7 on page 148. For non-current asset held for sale, the following needed to be disclosed: a description of the asset, description of the decision to sell the asset, detailing that all requirements for classification of a non-current asset held for sale is met, the expected date of completion, as well as whether the sale will be made for cash. Also, you must disclose the items that form part of the non-current asset held for sale and disclose the carrying amount of each of these items. And finally, let's talk about financial instruments. Many students correctly calculated the liability and equity components of the convertible bonds, but didn't provide the journal entries. Without journal entries, as required, there were no marks awarded. And that wraps up our feedback for the May 2012 exam. And finally, most, if not all, the comments made here will be applicable in your next exam. Good luck. Thank you for listening. Feel free to contact any of the lecturers should you have any query.